Welcome to another episode of the Albion Raw here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Ailey Packham, and we are getting our equaliser in first, in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, it was a disappointing start to the season as we grabbed a draw from the jaws of victory in our season opener against Fulham on Saturday. It was a game that still had a little bit of an air of pre-season about it, and it also revealed that our soft underbelly from last season still hasn't been rectified as we failed to close out the game. Onwards and upwards though, as this weekend we have the away game that everyone was looking out for when the fixtures were announced, as we become the first team to visit Everton's swanky new home in a competitive fixture. There was sure to be a wave of emotion swirling around Bramley Moor Dock, but let's hope that we're not the bridesmaids and we turn up and ruin their party. Meanwhile, the Albion women's team have been busy adding to their squad ahead of the WSL season, and perhaps the biggest news is that the Lionesses Eurostar Michelle Agyemang has rejoined the She-Girls on loan from Arsenal. Joining me today, again, unfortunately, Alan is not here as he is still unwell, but I am joined by Jason Thackeray. And I'm also delighted, and we're always delighted to welcome back the Argus's chief sports writer, Brian Owen. That's not to say we're not always welcome, delighted to have you, Jay, but you know what I mean.
I do, I get it.
But,
Get it done early.
Well, I know. Well, basically, you said you were a Jonah last year, Brian. So it
was like, I can't remember. Yeah, well, let's see how it goes.
But anyway, happy new season. Obviously, the first game now out of the way. Obviously, we went in there full of optimism, but the same issues that maybe blighted our season last year were still there, Jay.
They were. So I don't know if you've watched Match of the Day, and I haven't checked the statistic, but apparently we've now failed to win 11 games where we've been in the lead in the game, in the Premier League, which is the most of any Premier League club. So that's potentially 22 points under Hertzler that we've left on the pitch. And it was the same again on Saturday, unfortunately. Yep.
Brian?
Yeah, but there also been some comebacks. So it seemed to go last season from memory. It was quite fluctuating. They had a habit of comebacks as well. But they should have, you say, close it out. They should have killed it off. They should have been sort of more proactive than that. They had the chances. I thought they were slow getting into the game. But quite often early last season, the games they came into slowly were the better games. Yeah, but the sense of disappointment on three sides and the celebrations at one side, that's just told the story, didn't they?
Yeah, it's we've been there before. The 96th minute of the Amex seems to be a regular occurrence for away teams at the moment, which is not great. Although actually, it was the 96th minute last season when Pedro put that penalty away.
It has happened either way, but I think you do focus on what you can do better, not what you can do worse.
Okay, well, let's have a look at the Fulham game then. And perhaps, Brian, the biggest surprise, well, there was to me anyway, was that Danny Welbeck started on the bench.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure why that has been, because he has played minutes recently in the friendlies, but he did miss some part of pre-season. It looked like he'd sort of revealed his hand in pre-season, Hertzler, where he's played Matt O'Reilly in that sort of 10-ish type position behind Jorginho Rutet a lot. And then I know there was another podcast where there was a theory it was all a bluff and they'd learned something from Tony Bloom, and when it actually came down to it, you would go Welbeck and Rutet. I think that it's Jorginho's position, isn't it? That's the talking point. And there seems to be a lot of players, several players at Brighton, who would say their favourite position is off the front man, and he's one of them. So, yeah, I think, he did his best work in that position, let's say that.
Jason, I mean, I don't really see Jorginho as a nine, really, do you?
No, I agree. I don't think he is. I don't think he holds the ball up well enough, but I think he's also sort of slightly trickier playing in just behind, and he probably needs a striker that's stronger or holds the ball up better or turns it around the corner better, which is probably Welbeck. I've not seen the Greek lads play yet. I don't think anyone has, really.
I think Brian has.
No, I haven't.
Oh, you didn't go?
I've spoken to them. I didn't. I would have gone to that game the other day if I could have done, but it just didn't quite work out. But I think Jason's right. It's really hard to judge Brighton's attacking resources until we've seen Timas, until we've seen Kostoulas, and until we've seen what Tommy Watson maybe can do off the bench.
I mean, we've played one game, so it's very difficult to judge anything, really. I mean, we're still coming off the back of last season where we finished so strongly, obviously, and we finished last season without João Pedro on the team. Yeah. So this is that's something which is a continuation. But one player that did make a debut was Maxim de Kuyper. He impressed everyone, I think, Jason.
Yeah, he's impressed me. I was at the Wolfsburg game as well, and I thought he was decent in that. There was a bit of talk online. I think there was one of those tactical videos on YouTube that said he's great at coming forward but not so great at defending, but he's looked fine at the back to me. He seems to be making runs with Matoma nicely, seems to have a decent cross on him. Fairly much like everything I see of him so far. I think he could be an upgrade on Estupiñán if he carries on playing like that.
I mean, Joe, I mean, I did actually say this to you on Saturday, that the way that our supporters recycle songs, that there will be one or two checking that whether Maximus actually had a military history and whether he can actually cook. I have checked. Belgium doesn't actually have national service, so I don't think he has.
I think he is exciting, isn't he? And he's the one who's actually come in to the side and started playing straight away. I thought there was a moment late in the first half when he got under a cross and there was a header. Was it Wilson who headed a good chance wide? And there was that one right at the end when there was a volley over the bar, which was shown as a good chance. And I still have a feeling the referee was pointing for a free kick to Brighton as that happened.
Yeah, was that the Tete one?
Yeah, even though nobody referred to that at all. And it was in, I sit right in front of the Talk Sport commentary and it was that huge chance and it made the highlights. But so there were those two, but there is a trade-off. But he did used to be a forward in his early days, and he was pushed back temporarily. Pushed back temporarily and sort of stuck there. Yeah, he's exciting. He's very, very exciting to watch.
Yeah, I mean, we did notice that again in pre-season that he was doing that. And actually, I mean, I know you've spoken to Fabian about it and about how they're integrating players now. And we mentioned the Greek lads and how I don't think we're going to see them in any sort of first team action for at least until September, I'd imagine, because that's the way we're doing things now. We're not signing box fresh players, and we're letting people acclimatise at their own pace.
Yeah, I think there's still quite decent money, though, aren't they, being spent? But I look back when they last played. Kostoulas last played, I think I'm right in saying, the night that Brighton played Aston Villa, at 0-3. Right. And Timas last played the day after they drew at Man City, 2-2. So that's a fair while ago. So, there seems to be so much excitement about Kostoulas. And I was really surprised that they signed a player of that age for that money. Compared to what Brighton have normally done. But there seems to be people who know a lot more about him than me. I've just spoken to him and he comes across as like very confident. But he's going to be, and he'll need that. He's got decent English, but there is going to be that adaptation process.
Yeah. Well, Jay, we've seen this with other players. Just because they have a big price tag on them, it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be an instant success and we want now. Why are they not scoring goals for us already? It takes time. You know, these are young kids leaving home for the first time, probably coming to a new country with a new language, with different food and a different environment. It doesn't all automatically happen like that, does it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, we eased Belabor in, really. His first season, he didn't really play that much at all. There's other players that we bought for a fair chunk of money and sent straight out on loan. There's players that have taken time, so Jorginho would be one where, you know, you think we've broken the transfer agreement that he had in his contract with Leeds to get him to come to us and pay something like $40 million, I think, for him. He didn't integrate straight away. He looked better in the second half of last season than he did in the first. And now we're kind of playing him out of position to circle back where we started. So
it's the Brighton way.
Yeah, you're right. The price tag, I don't think, has a lot to do with necessarily them starting immediately and being incredible immediately. They will represent potential to Tony Bloom over the course of the contract or over the course of the time that they stay with us, add value to the club and then get sold probably for more money than we paid for them.
Yeah. Brian?
Yeah, I'm interested to see what happens. I mean, obviously, there's the League Cup game coming up, isn't there? Maybe that could be an opportunity to see a little bit. You just hear such great things about Costulas. And like I said, when I spoke to him, he comes across as like mid-20s. He comes across as a really confident, mature-type character. But it is a big... Having the two of them together will help, I would imagine. But there are so many when you look back. I mean, McAllister took a while to get settled in, yeah, coming through COVID and all that. Caicedo... Just going back over the files when those two played for the 21s of the week, remembering Caicedo playing against Man City under 21s, when Liam Delap scored twice for Man City, and Ciso playing against Liverpool under 21s. So the one I'm quite interested about in the new signings, I don't know if we're going to come on to this, is Boscagli. Mm-hmm. I think Brighton have been after him for so long. When he was another one I chatted to in Spain, and he's a bit of a character, you know. He used to cycle to training and to matches, and he's got this little sort of tattoo thing on his arm where it shows his trophies and a picture of his bike that he used to cycle to training on. He was a really good, he felt almost like a Veltman type, old pro, good communicator, good presence type person. He was talking about how Brighton had been after him since, was it 2018, or initially showed interest when he was at Nice. So I think although we haven't seen him, I'm interested to see what part he plays. I've got a feeling over a long season, yeah, the ups and downs, he could be really useful.
Didn't he play in one or both of the behind closed doors games in pre-season?
Not on the ones he might have done. He has played during pre-season. Yeah, and he was obviously on the bench, so he could have gone on Saturday. Mm. So he was ready, same as Coppola. And there was a lot of excitement about Coppola when he scored that goal against Stoke City. So, yes, I'm trying to remember who's played when, but they hadn't played in the two that we saw with our crowd and with media. They played in the very private games.
Yeah, I mean, Boscagli, he looks really good. I saw him play for PSV in the Champions League last year. He was strong, forward thinking, and you know, there's going to be question marks about who is going to be our best central defensive partnership, and you can't do that without discussing Lewis Dunk. I'm not saying he was at fault for their goal, but it was a weak header. But it was just zonal marking, and there wasn't no one. Everyone just turned off for it, though.
Yeah, I think everyone did turn off. I mean, Dunk, I think, is not quite the Dunk he was 2 or 3 years ago, if I'm honest. But I don't think he did much wrong on Saturday. I saw him get some stick on all sides. I don't think he really put a foot wrong on Saturday. I think it would be unfair to single him out. Yeah, he brushed that header across that they scored, but he was just trying to clear the ball in the last minute. Like you say, it was zonal. He's there when he is. I think the interesting thing is going to be who our regular starting centre-backs end up when everyone's fit. What happens to Igor as well, because I think he's probably on his way out until Webster got injured. What happens with our left foot, right foot combination? I don't think that back four is in any way settled at the moment.
We'll come to that in part two, Jay. Patience. But the big story going into the game, Brian, and actually it was such a big story that you hardly wrote about it, which was nice.
which was that of
Carlos Baleba. Obviously, he started on Saturday. It was great. Can we put these rumours to bed now?
Well, I've thought I've kept the same line all along, but I was told, well, it must be sort of 5 weeks ago now, that he's going to be a big money sale in all likelihoods, and that he'll be on his way, but not until next summer at the earliest, not this summer. And that was before all this came up. So I did do a story along those lines. And it was like trustworthy information. So I'm pretty confident that he would. It's like one of those transfer window, never say never. You're quite, sometimes something can happen unexpected. You might get to the last week of the window and somebody's desperate for a player, but I just don't see him going, and that's the line that I've gone along all along. And I don't know if you were being ironic that I hardly wrote about it, or you meant it. But,
no, I meant it because I know basically when we're seeing all of these stories that were coming out from across social media and everything, it was mostly just a load of rubbish, and it was the noise coming from you and Andy, in fact, rather the lack of noise coming from you, Andy, was absolutely deafening, and that told me everything that I knew about the story, which was like, it's just rumours, and United wanting a player that isn't for sale, and if they want him, they're going to have to break the British transfer record to get him if they want him now. Simple as that. And that there, other than that, there's no other story.
I don't know if a lot of it is rumours. It is probably factual that they are that they're going almost through the back door and sounding out intermediaries and little messages, and then the way that it's everything. That then gets picked up, and it becomes, if you look through a sort of social media, Facebook, whatever, it's almost like a snowball of, yes, he's coming, that means he'll... And when I was at the press conference last Friday, and I think it was Sky, one of the broadcast reporters, not Johnny locally, it was one of the pretty sure, yeah, it was Sky, said, I knew they would be, they go first, and I knew they would ask the question about the Labour, what's going on. And when Fabian Hertzler said he's very, very, very confident, the interviewer, I don't know if it was for a dramatic effect or if it was genuine, but he seemed surprised by the answer. And I think that just reflects the coverage there's been nationally and the sort of assumption there's been that in the end, Brighton are just, they're just playing games, they're just trying to get the fee up and he'll be going. But I know this might be come back to haunt me at some stage, but things can change. But certainly as things stand now, and this is based on somebody else, what I've been told and the way it's been told to me, I've never really thought he's going.
No. It's one that we know what the Brighton model is, right? We know that there will be a big sale every year. But hopefully there will come a point where these players actually don't want to go anywhere and they think it is a good place for us to actually stay. But I'm not sure that would actually fit within our model per se, because it's like it's how we generate our income, I suppose. But it's just frustrating that when you have all this bluster coming from various other sources that have absolutely no credibility, and they just haven't got a clue what they're talking about, and it's just frustrating, because you can just see this, it's just lies, and you know, and they say, oh, he's already agreed terms. Well, isn't that tapping up?
Yeah, I'm not sure about this sort of thing. All seems to go on, doesn't it? It's not just come in and make an offer, but basically I'm just going on being guided by what I've been told, and yeah, by who I've been told and how I was told. So
yeah. But as for the game itself, he was great. Didn't look like he was affected by anything. And you know, it's great. But I mean, I do want to talk about our midfield, though, Jason. Ayari's getting a lot of stick at the moment. He's a player I like. He's young, but he's in a position where a player that I really like a lot more, who's currently playing at right back and should be in that position. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Is it a certain Dutchman?
It would be a certain Dutchman.
The initials MW.
Matt Zvefa. Matt Zvefa. I mean, I think he was... Matt was had a really, really good game on Saturday. But, you know, I've just... I saw enough from him last season, particularly towards the back end of last season, where he actually looked a lot more settled and he was getting minutes, but he was being played at right back. Now, he made his name as that central midfielder in that position where Ayari is at the moment. And I just think he could be a lot more dynamic. And then you've got the option of changing it. And we've got competition all over the squad, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. But it'd be interesting. I would like to see him play now in his best position.
If given who's fit and ready, maybe. I think that if my midfield two would be Belieber and Hinchelwood, if they're both fit every day of the week, and Weaver would be on the bench. If I'm quite honest, I don't think he's necessarily our best option at right back either. I find that slightly puzzling. Again, if you talk about having everyone fit, you'd have Veltman, you'd have Lamptey, you'd have Cadioglu, you'd have Charlie Tasker, and then you've got Matt Zvefa, who's the midfielder who's playing there. And he's not doing a bad job. I thought he was okay. I thought he linked up with Minty fine. But play your right backs at right backs and your midfielders in midfield. But I'd say I wouldn't put him in the team ahead of Hinchelwood if and when Hinchelwood.
Oh, interesting. Brian?
Well, it felt like a stopgap with Vifa last season, but now, I mean, Veltman is on the bench. He has been playing. So it is clearly a selection thing. And I haven't asked too much about it yet. I think quite a lot to ask about. Obviously, we asked last season, did you think he could develop into that position, Vifa? Excuse me. And he sort of said, yes, that could become his best position. And I think it's this that fullbacks aren't necessarily just fullbacks now. They're fullbacks tucking into midfield and getting involved with play. And he does get forward. He doesn't go raiding down the outside like a Tarik Lamptey, but he does get forward and play passes and get involved with moves and put little crosses in. So he obviously, Hertzler likes that more than the sort of traditional right back of Veltman. I think that, I suppose one interesting thing is that Hinchelwood was the midfielder converted into fullback at one stage, and that was still the case with England under-21s. But now Hertzler seems to prefer Vifa doing that. So I think it's almost to get another ball player, another midfielder onto the pitch.
I mean, I just wondered, because it's a World Cup year as well, that Vifa will want to be getting into that Dutch team in his best position. And so, I mean, it's whether he gets frustrated being out at fullback. But again, I mean, like we saw actually last season, didn't we, that Hertzler does like to have a midfielder as a fullback. He tried it with Belabor a couple of times, so that they step inside.
Yeah. I mean, people talk about, are Brighton going to play three at the back this season? He was asked that in one of his post-match things at Southampton. They do play three at the back, but it's just for periods of games, or it's not, they stand there at the start of the game with three of them in the line. But they do that. It is very flexible. But this time last year when we went to Everton, I thought Vifa was going to be the centrepiece of that team in the position right where you say, deep line midfield. And obviously the course didn't quite run like that. But I thought he had a good game, like you say, on Saturday.
Okay. Well, it was a game that there was chances. Obviously, our goal came from a penalty. And so we were obviously not taking those chances. There was the header that Matoma had in the first half where you just hoped and prayed that Danny Welbeck would get one like that. Because that was it was a good chance that he should have probably taken. Gomez had a couple of chances. Gruda should have scored, but perhaps the worst miss of the lot was that of Yankuba Minte after that break where it came directly from Fulham's corner, didn't it? And Jorginho got it inside to Mitoma, whose first touch let him down for a change, and it was just behind him, but the chance still fell for Minte, and he's really got to be hitting the back of the net with that shot.
Yeah, I mean, he has, and there were other chances where I think we really should have hit the back of the net as well. It's quite funny, you were with me in the Albert. I don't know if you were there when I was talking to this guy Craig that I know. We both predicted that we would draw 1-1, miss a sack full of chances, and their equaliser would come late in the game, and it worked out exactly like that. We probably should have stuck some money on it.
I mean, we're kind of not.
And it's not just that one. We missed a sack full of chances. There's a goal that Minty did score, but the ball sort of rolled a foot off the pitch before he scored it.
It was well out.
He was obviously out from the West Apple, which is where I sit. So, yeah. But Gruder's one, I think, definitely should have done better. I don't know. I still don't know whether that was a cross or a shot.
Yeah, because I was looking at that, and what stuck out for me when I saw it on afterwards rather than live is Welbeck's run. And he, I don't know, does a centre forward, a number nine, should he be making that run in there to either touch it in or get a rebound if one appears? I was a bit disappointed with him in a way that he didn't, that he sort of stopped and watched that happening, because it wasn't as close, Gruder, as it looked from where we were sitting watching the game. So that was, and after the dunk header, that was a decent opportunity from from the corner.
But I mean, there was that other chance as well, which was great work from Diego Gomez, actually. And I mean, he put Leno under pressure and somehow came away with the ball. And he took the shot when Welbeck was there unmarked. So it would have been that would have seen it out, wouldn't it? But there was a lot of talk before the game, Brian. I know it was mentioned in the press conferences about who was going to be taking the penalties this year with the exit of João Pedro, and we got that answered in the first game.
And it was quite a simple answer in the end. The player who took the penalty was the player who took the previous penalty and scored. And I did my little TikTok video after the press conference and said, well, if Welbeck's on the pitch, it's going to be Welbeck, because he took the penalty at Wolves when João Pedro was out. He took the penalty in pre-season. And if Welbeck's not, we'll see. And as soon as I stopped recording, I thought, well, Matt O'Reilly took the one at Tottenham. So we did hear about processes and practice and talk with the set piece coach and more analysis and plenty, all this sort of stuff. But in the end, that may well have gone on. I'm sure it did. But the answer was the player who took the one before took it and took it well, to be fair to him.
There is a lot of talk about Matt O'Reilly at the moment, Brian, and he's being linked with moves to Italy. And he didn't really do an awful lot to dispel that post-match.
I thought he did. I thought he, it was weird because I spoke to him after one of the games in Spain and we almost had the same conversation, but it's 4 weeks later. But we're told it's sort of fake news. That's the word we've been given, not by him. He sort of played it. it's really strange that his name just keeps appearing from time to time. And there was one post by Romano which appeared early in the transfer window and was then deleted. So it's quite strange he gets mentioned with clubs. There was one, Napoli was one, where I checked with a very good contact there, who obviously Brighton and Napoli have had a few bit of business down the years, and he checked with the club, and he was told that O'Reilly was on the list of players of interest, but no more than that. The Juventus one, I went through three different papers in Italy and found three different versions. One was it would be a loan, one was that there was a 5-year deal in place, and one was that they were interested but they had to sell first. Mm-hmm. So, these things can change. I think there's probably a bit more chance of this changing than Baleba, but I've reported it accurately and you haven't misinterpreted what he
was. No, I haven't.
The impression that I'm certainly getting is he keeps saying he's having fun here, isn't he? He hasn't pledged his season to Brighton, that's for sure. He hasn't said, I'm here no matter what.
Well, he's a player. I mean, obviously, he plays for Denmark, but he's very English. Grew up around here. It's always been his dream to play in the Premier League, and you know he's achieving his ambition. Obviously, it was a stagnated season last year for him. What with that horrific injury that he got in that game against Crawley, and that probably stopped a lot of his momentum of last season because he was so highly rated at Celtic, and there was a lot of excitement about him when he came in. So, I mean, I'm still very excited about him. I think there's a lot more to come from him. There's certainly games that I saw him in last year where I thought he was just such a clever player. You know, just these little touches, a little poke around the corner where no one else. It was just clever things that would set us up for good chances. So, I'm excited for a lot of stuff to come from him, but you know, only time will tell. Okay, so it was 1-1. I can't really read too much into a first game of the season, Jay, but it's just frustrating, isn't it? It feels like a defeat when that happens.
It really does, and yeah, Brian hit the nail on the head. We were all up in the West Upper with our hands in our heads and shaking our heads and yelling rude words at the pitch, and the Fulham fans are all cavorting about won the World Cup, and you do when you get a last minute equaliser like that, especially when you've not been in the game. I don't think we played particularly well, but I think we pressed them well. I think we created the better chances. I think we could have made a comfortable case for winning that game, and I don't think it would have been a lack of justice on Fulham, but I don't know. It just, there was a series of little mistakes as well. So they got the throw in, and Welbeck didn't track his runner at all. So they got an easy throw in. That then leads to a shot that gets a slight deflection that gives them a corner. We then switch off on the corner and header it straight to their strike. And it's that list of that chain of events that didn't happen at any other point during that game happens when we've only got 30 seconds to bring it back and score again.
Well, at the end of it, it's drop points, Jace. And last time I checked, the points have the same value in August as they do in May. It's just frustrating, and we've seen this before. Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online, radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. And we are brought to you in association with the wonderful Flowers Unlimited. Now, Jason, where do you go when you want to impress your wife after you've had a late night out, maybe, or you just feel like you want to get her something? Do you know where to go?
I'd go to Flowers Unlimited, Aidy, especially if they're just down the road from me, and I'm sure.
Well, 175 to 177 Portland Road.
That's the place.
Yeah, absolutely. And did you know, Jay, that if you're a Brighton season ticket holder and you mention this fact to lovely staff there, you'll get a 20% discount. It's amazing.
I do, because I got my wife's birthday flowers from that, and that's a true story. I didn't tell her they were 20% off, though. I hope she doesn't listen to this now.
Okay, so Brian, I got some unexpected news today in the fact that I got an alert from the club, and I was absolutely thrilled about this, and that is that the Albion women's team have re-signed the Lionesses' star of the summer, Michelle Agyemang, and I can't say how massive this is going to be for the club.
It is, isn't it? Because it's a huge name. It's like, obviously they had Frank Kirby signing, which was big, Nikita Paris. With Michelle Agyemang, it felt like that sort of fluctuated a little bit. Not long ago, there was talk about it happening. Then there seemed to be guidance that it was in the balance, and she went off with Arsenal to pre-season. So I must have think my hopes of that happening had gone down a bit. And then, obviously, it's there, and it's a huge... she's a big name, isn't she, in football these days?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Jay, you're nodding along there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I watched pretty much... Well, I did watch every England game in the Euros, every Lioness game, and she was incredible when she came on. She's obviously in that super sub role, but she just seemed to transform games. She was a really decent impact sub, and pretty much everybody I was... sort of talking to online during that competition said, well, she'll never come back to Brighton. And she's come back to Brighton. It's fantastic. It's a real coup.
It really is a statement of intent, I think, for this season. Because, I mean, obviously, when we lost Nikita Paris, I thought, oh, what's going on here? Are we just getting rid of everyone again like they seem to every summer? But, after the finish they had last year of finishing fifth and... they're regenerating that squad again, and having Michelle there, I mean, this is a big star. I mean, nobody really wants to go to Crawley. I'm not. We all know that. But with the announcement of the women's stadium probably coming in the next couple of months, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
We need stars to fill that stadium, and this is box office. This is someone that lit up that tournament and brought us home the trophy with those fabulous late goals. But I mean, but the problem is though, Brian, last season it was very much a bit part for her with the She Girls, wasn't it?
I was going to say that her season only really sparked into life with that debut goal for England, where she took the ball down, was about
the Belgian
seconds
one.
After going on, and thumped it in. And I thought her club form actually was kick-started by that. She was fairly quiet for quite a while last season. I think Brighton's women's form, no coincidence, just matched Frank Kirby's availability to a large degree, in that the way they started the season, the way her last real contribution was a winner against West Ham at the Amex, then a long time without winning. So there was quite a tough period during that season, and then that brilliant finish in the game against Arsenal. But I think that goal just kick-started her, and then there was the awards night where she was sort of centre stage for a little part of that, Young Player of the Year for Brighton. And it's just all sort of snowballed almost from that moment when she took that ball down and thumped it in.
Yeah, it's just an exciting signing. I'm really excited for him, and hopefully that will put some more bums on seats at the Broadfield, and hopefully we'll have more games at the Amex to come, it puts the Albion's women's team firmly in the eyes of people who watch that tournament during the summer, and who knows what we can qualify for Europe this year.
Yeah, and also, you remember, we've got a winner from the women's AFCON, a finalist from the Copa America, although I know that final didn't go particularly well. But Carabali was excellent leading up to that final, from what I can tell. You say an announcement within the next couple of months. I think that's almost like saying that Liverpool will finish in the top 10. I think the hope is true. But the hope is that it's a little bit less than that. And I know that Brighton would love to get it out there as soon as they can to promote interest around. We're at season ticket sales time, aren't we? So yeah. Let's see when that is. But yeah, I think you're right within the next couple of months, but maybe closer to the start of the 2 months rather than the end of it.
Well, I haven't heard that Martin Perry's come out of retirement yet, so I don't think there's any planning application issues. So we will. But I mean, I know Martin's on tenterhooks; he's waiting. But anyway, let's just finish up with the Albion window stuff. Looking at the squad at the weekend on the back of the programme, it's still very bloated. There's a lot of players who probably aren't going to get very many minutes. There seems to be a lot of South Americans here who probably might not be here come the end of the window, Brian.
Yeah, I think there is going to be. And there hasn't been any secret of that from the likes of Hertzler and Paul Barber, that the players, there are too many. They do need to do some business. I mean, hopefully, because it will keep us busy, won't it, going into that last week and that deadline day. We ran a poll about what Brighton fans would like to see happen with Facundo Buonanotte, and he seems to be one who sort of impressed Hertzler, but not enough. And our poll said most people wanted him to stay, but you think he would go elsewhere. I noticed Malik Yelkuye obviously went out on loan and went straight into the Swansea City midfield. So that's quite promising. I think that might be linked as well with what we're talking about, Baleba, midfield succession, why they're not ready for him to go yet. But yeah, you'd think there'll be, I've just tried to grab my programme actually, the back of the Southampton one. There's a lot of names there, but yeah, we'll keep us busy, won't it? There's certain players, Sima, I mean, he's been around a bit more than I thought he would be, but you think he would go, and Ciso is trying to get fit in time to get himself a move rather than to come back here. Let's have something to keep us busy.
Yeah, well, Sarmiento as well. We've got Igor. Is another one who I mean, Jason, you mentioned that Igor with Webster's injury might see him stick around, but don't forget we've also now got Boscagli, we've got
Coppola,
and obviously there's a few coming through the ranks as well, and we've got to have that pathway still, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Yeah, I don't know. I think it looks. I'm basing my comment earlier on around Igor because it looked like he was set to go probably permanently, if not on loan, and that never ended up happening. I might have added two and two together and made five, but the rumours calmed down after Webster's injury. We probably have one centre back too many. But again, it's that need to play a right centre back and a left centre back who are comfortable doing it, so that we can move the ball, so that we can back the press up and all of that kind of thing. The way that we play, we're still tapping it short from goal kicks and knocking it around the back before we play up when the ball starts with Bart. So it's got to be a comfortable ball playing player. Eagles probably in fifth or sixth place, but I don't necessarily know whether that means he's going to go. I think Brian's probably right about Buonanotte. We just seem to have far too many people that are comfortable in that 10 position, but not quite tearing up trees. I think Gruder's almost exactly the same sort of player. And I think Hertzler would probably rather have Gruder around just because he's German and he understands the style of play slightly better.
I would agree with that, but I'd also, I mean, I would also agree that I'd like to keep Facundo around. I mean, I've certainly seen enough from him. Obviously, it was under a different manager, really, wasn't it? It was under De Zerbi. I think he was unfortunate with the way it went at Leicester last season. From what I could see when he was playing for Leicester, he was certainly didn't look out of place. And I think he was an important player for us in that De Zerbi team. I don't know what it is that Fabian wants from him, Brian.
No, he certainly seems to have a very good attitude. He seems to be a real worker, a real sort of battler. He's only, I think, 20. So I don't know that you'd like to... I would have thought he might still be part of their plans. Another name, Andrew Morama, says we're going to quite see him, but he seems, you know, like a good young professional, a talented player. I guess he'll be going out somewhere and maybe that'll be more permanent. I mean, there's still... will we see Solly March come back at some point? I think I got the impression he was sort of building up muscle around the knee that was damaged. So over the course of a long season. And, yeah, we're talking about the players going out, aren't we? But, you know, for Kadioglu, I think, almost gets forgotten about in the resources Brighton have got. Let's see what he can do. But, yes, there will be, you'd think there will be a few departures. And some of them seem to be getting good loan moves and doing quite well. Evan Ferguson, see if he relaunches himself, for example.
Well, hopefully that's one that we'd like to see come back, though, isn't it? I mean, I think that from what I can see, I mean, obviously you can only beat who's in front of you. And I know that the opponents that Roma were playing when he was scoring all those goals pre-season weren't necessarily of the highest calibre. But, you know, it's something that Glenn Murray says, putting the ball in the back of the net, it breeds confidence. And, you know, he'd lost that. And if he can get that back and hopefully come back to us with his confidence restored, we all know that it's taken a knock. And that there are possibly other issues behind the scenes as well. I just want him to succeed, and I want him to come back as the player that we thought we had in the first place, Jason.
Yes. I agree 100%. I haven't got much more to add to that, really.
I
said everything I think about it.
I was just reading a piece from Italy, actually, about how Milan think they can get Dovbyk from Roma because Ferguson is making such a good impression at Roma, and it said in trainings, especially in training. So it looks like he's... I mean, that's not much to go on, but if that's all correct, that feels like a good indication of how he's knuckling down and tackling his new challenge. Sorry, I didn't mean to start the conversation wandering off onto Evan Ferguson.
No, please do.
We're not short of current Brighton players to talk about.
But, so, you know, it's just like, you know, for him, at that age, to have the opportunity to play in that stadium in front of those vociferous fans every week, I'm like, wow, that must be amazing. That's absolutely amazing.
It might be just the slight step down that he needs in standard. And I don't like saying that Serie A is a step down from the Premier League, because I've brought up on Serie A and how exciting and how fantastic it seemed like the Super League. But it is, you know, Scott McTominay, Billy Gilmore, it is a slight step down, but not much. And it might just be what he needs.
Yeah, well, it's a step up from West Ham, Brian.
Yes, I guess he's another one who was in that under-23s game that I was looking at. Yeah, another young player, you forget how young that player is.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to this weekend then. And we are heading to Everton, who lost their first game of the season away at Leeds. They didn't really put up too many trees. But... Jason, I mean, it is the game that all Brighton fans were looking for when the fixtures came out. And it's just a bit unfortunate that it's come first up, isn't it? Or not, as the case may be.
It's unfortunate for me because it's about the only weekend I couldn't make, because we're looking after our friend's goggle weekend and he needs quite a lot of care. So I'm not going, and I'm gutted because I love Liverpool as a city, and it's a new ground. And I think even though they'll have a bigger party, they looked absolutely useless last night. I think we've got a good chance of getting 3 points up there again. So, yeah. And the Ship of Mitre is a fantastic pub as well.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Jay. I've never been there.
Definitely didn't see you there last season.
No, definitely didn't. What was it, 70 beers on draft they've got?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a brilliant trip, and I would love to have seen the new ground, but I'll do it next year.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, Brighton, the Premier League's actually pretty boring stadium-wise, so to have a new one to go to, it's really exciting.
Yeah, I guess it is, yeah. It's got, what's the last new one we went to? Brentford, maybe? Everton was different, but it was one of those which I didn't enjoy, Goodison, I mean, which I didn't enjoy working at the time. But then afterwards, you go back and think, yeah, that was really good to go to be there. And yeah, that street, but the opposite side to where you would have been with fans, I guess, that street, narrow street with the terraced houses. So
yeah, it was lovely.
It was a bit of a nightmare to work at, but it was nice to think afterwards, yeah, that was a real part of football.
The press box at Goodison was designed for people who haven't got legs.
Well, and didn't have laptops.
And had no desire to see any sort of screen.
Yeah.
It was all first world problems.
I don't really know what to expect from this, because there's not really anybody to look at Kenyans and say, what did they make of it? And I'm sort of looking forward to it. I walked past there, not the game last season, the start of the season, the one before, which was about November, and I walked along the waterfront to that stadium. It did look impressive. But as you say, probably there was a penalty incident in that Leeds game which might have masked all talk of how Everton played. So we'll see how this one goes.
Well, I mean, we're no strangers, Jason, to games at a new stadium. We've been there ourselves, and there's going to be a wall of emotion. I remember, obviously, we had the Spurs game before the Doncaster game. But, you know, everyone's forging a new routine. Everyone's going to be sat next to different people. You know, you might be sat next to the same person for 40 years, and all of a sudden they're on the other side of the stadium. I've obviously not been there, so I don't know how it's going to stack up atmosphere wise. But I mean, I know that those little things like sitting next to different people, not having everybody in the same areas, it can affect it.
It can affect the atmosphere. I don't think it will do on Sunday. I think it's just going to be a big party, and they'll coordinate it very similarly to the way that we did for the Doncaster game. I'm sure there'll be flags or banners or TIFO or whatever, and they'll have the music pumping up from early. They'll get the fans to get there early to find their seat, to try the bars out and all of that kind of thing. And I think, you know, some of their songs are quite basic as well, and they'll just carry round the stands. I think it's important that we put a pin in it as early as possible and just push them back and ideally get an early goal, and that'll take all the noise out of it.
Yeah, I mean, we're not really that well known for early goals. I mean, I did have a look at this, at the stats on this earlier, because someone said to me at the weekend that we never score early goals. And actually, we did a few times last year, actually. There was like Jorginho's at Chelsea was in the 7th minute. There was, hang on, I've got a list here somewhere.
Doesn't bode well then.
Yeah, Pedro at Bournemouth was in the 4th minute. Belabor at Wolves against Wolves in the cup. That was the 14th minute.
It was the first half at Everton last season. I think it was about 22, 23 minutes, so it wasn't early.
Yeah.
But it was enough to put a big dent in their sort of first home game of the season.
And they were trying to build that one up as well as first home game of the last season. So there was quite a lot of build up on that, and they were trying to make it a little bit special. I think Tony Bellew was on the pitch doing something or other. And like I say, Brighton did put a sort of spanner in the works for them on that day. My impressions of Goodison were always, and therefore the Everton crowd, is they can be one of the loudest and they can be one of the quietest, and there's very little anything in between. Yeah, we'll see. I don't remember Brighton being that great, actually, in the first game at the Amex, but they obviously came up with a result.
The goals... What can you remember what minute the goals were scored?
It was 90 plus about 7, wasn't it?
It was really one of those really bizarre, families that happen from time to time, but the goals were scored in the 83rd and the 97th minute.
Yeah.
So obviously 83 in the cup final, 97 Hereford, it's Goldston. It's like, you know, there was a nice little bit of symmetry to it.
Yeah, but one thing that I know we have been used to ever since the first season in the Premier League, when Brighton got off to a bad start and were sort of caught out a little bit, is they've never really got off to a slow start. They've always had a win in either their first or their second or both games. So, yeah, I suppose what if it became 1 point out of two games and Man City to come, it would be not a great situation, but I think they'll go there with a lot of confidence. They go anywhere and they try and take the game to the home team, and it might be like Jason's saying, it might be that the atmosphere can almost work against a team. Or I don't know. We'll see.
And Jay, generally speaking, last year we were pretty good away from home. I think we got more points away from home than we did at home, didn't we, last season?
I'm trying to remember now. I can do the stats. I saw the good, the bad, and the ugly away from home last season. I was at Forest.
Yeah, we're not talking about Forest.
And I was at Everton, and I was at Spurs as well. So, you know, I saw a lot of high scoring goals when they were either for or against us. I don't remember seeing a draw. I pick and choose. I tend to get to between 5 and 10 aways each season, and they were all high scoring affairs last season, coincidentally.
But lineup will be interesting again, because like we were talking about Welbeck earlier, and one thing I would say with Welbeck is I like him as a starter and not off the bench, and there are players who go the other way round, and I think we saw that last Saturday. So I wouldn't be surprised if he had some sort of got set back a little bit fitness wise by missing one or two games from pre-season, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's starting, and then that leads to it's interesting who plays off him.
Well, he did start the first game in that whole two-game thing they were doing in pre-season. It just completely threw everything out the window, because it's like, because he started in that first game, I thought we said it earlier, I thought that was going to be a curveball and he'd start in this game. I certainly prefer to see Welbeck starting. I think, as you said, he is one that grows into a game, and he's just a Rolls Royce of a footballer, isn't it? I just love Danny, and with him starting, it means you can put Jorginho in a slightly different role. But if you do that, then do you lose? Does O'Reilly miss out? But then he becomes an impact player. I mean, there's headaches all over the pitch for Fabian, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so, but I think they need a Belaiba or a Hinchelwood on the pitch at all times in midfield.
I agree with that.
Yeah, well, I mean, do you not think that Vifa can fit? I mean, we're going back to what we said earlier.
Well, yeah, or Vifa, or Milner, or there might be somebody else.
Iari.
who he is actually. No, not an Iari. Not Iari and Gomez, not Iari and O'Reilly, something like that. I mean, Iari and Belaiba, yeah. IR in Hinchelwood, but I think, and we saw it maybe a little bit at Southampton in the friendly, and when Belaiba went off the other day against Fulham, I think you need him or Hinchelwood in that midfield.
Yeah.
Or a similar of the players who we will play in that midfield. Yeah, I agree with Vifa if he was playing in there.
Yeah. Okay, well, we are running out of time, but just before we do, let's have a quick look at the state of play. We've seen everybody play now. Is there anybody that's really impressed you? And who are you worried about, Brian?
I didn't have a really close look at what was going on. I suppose it's good for Sunderland that they get the win, but I think it's almost worse after one game, because I've listened to a lot of radio and it's been so many opinions based on one game. At least when it's zero games, you can say, I don't know what to expect. So I don't think you can change. I don't think you can change on what you thought. Same really, and my prediction of seventh for Brighton was tentative, and I can see it being better, I can see it being worse. But just don't judge it on too much, I don't suppose.
Yeah. Jason, same question.
Forest looked annoyingly good again against Brentford. Okay, Brentford have lost a lot of players and had a brand new manager in Keith Andrews, but they picked up exactly where they left off. So that'll be a bit of a worry. United played reasonably well against Arsenal without getting a result, and you wonder what's going to happen to their season. I think for us, anything in the top 10 is a result, but I think Tony would love us to get back into Europe, and I think if we're going to, we need to pick it up. I don't think Fulham is good enough.
Yeah. And Brian, actually, last week, I forgot to ask you for yours, actually. Last week, we did our annual pre-season predictions, most of which end up being quite psychedelic at times. But who would you predict to be your player of the season for this coming year?
Gosh, that's a bit of a thing to spell. I suppose when he's staying, maybe Belay will be that could be the one. He was what, young player, wasn't he? So
he was,
and
yeah.
if he's going to go next summer, then make him player of the season.
Van Hecker's still here at the moment. So,
work it the other way around. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him. But the beauty of it is you don't know, do you? There might be some surprise, somebody who we might be singing the praises of Kostoulas by sort of January.
Yeah. Jason, same question. Who's your player of the season? Who's it going to be?
So if I had to slap a £20 note down at the bookies, I'd take Belaba, but I honestly think someone could emerge that has an almost transformational season. It could be De Kuyper, it could be Kadioglu, stays fit, it could be Jorginho, it could be Mitoma, who wouldn't be so much of an emergence, but he has the potential to have a season. Minty too. Either of those two, if they get a few goals and assists, will be right up there in the reckoning for player of the season.
So none of you are going for Jorginho? Interesting.
I did think about it. As I was seeing here, I was thinking about it. He's definitely a possible as well, because he only played half a season last season, when you think about it, in terms of appearances. Mitoma's probably had two seasons where he could have been player of the season justifiably, but he wasn't, and nobody argued with that either. But hopefully there's a contenders. It's not obvious.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I'm not going to ask you for your wild cards, but just in case you missed it, my wild card. Well, you're like this, Jay. I don't know what I must have been drinking at the time, but I said that Jack Hinterwood is going to make his full England debut and might possibly go to the World Cup.
I don't think that's a wild card. I don't even think. I think that's a tame wild card. I think there is a real chance of that. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
I love it. You make me. I thought it was a stupid one. So thank you, Brian.
No. I think if he has a good season and if he plays in midfield, AD, sorry to say it again.
Well, that's my theory was because he's a jack of all trades and he can fit in everywhere. But we haven't.
There is that. I mean, he played left back in the final.
As a squad player, he could possibly be. He could be on the plane. But that is all we've got time for this week. So. Thank you so much to Jason Thackeray. Thank you to Brian Owen. I've been AD Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. We're off to a great crash of housewarming party. See you next week. Bye.
house.